Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. If you've ever met with a therapist, you may have wondered what he or she was writing down while you were speaking. Maybe you've even tried a sneak peek and tried to decipher upside-down handwriting. Well, now Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center is removing that guesswork for some patients. A new pilot program lets carefully selected psychiatric patients read their therapist's notes online. Advocates of this approach say it enables more open and honest discussions about mental health treatment, but others worry that the notes could have a chilling effect on the doctor-patient relationship and might even harm some patients by revealing information they misinterpret or aren't ready to read. Here on Radio Boston, we wanted to hash out the pros and cons of open notes in therapy, so we're joined by two Beth Israel social workers. Steve O'Neill is the hospital's social work manager for psychiatry and primary care, and he participates in the pilot program. Steve, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And Katel Gellick is a senior social worker at the hospital. She works on inpatient psychiatry units, which are not participating in the program, and she also has a small private practice. And Katel, thanks to you too for coming in.
Thank you.
And listeners, we want your thoughts on this issue. We want to know if you think giving patients access to their therapy notes could help their treatment, or could it end up doing more harm than good? If you have had the opportunity to read your doctor's notes about you at some point, what did you see or learn that helped or hurt you? Tell us your concerns or questions about this open notes approach when it comes to letting mental health patients see their therapy notes. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Steve, I want to start with you since you participate in the pilot program. Would you explain briefly how the open notes system works?
Sure. This is a program that basically started about 4 years ago on the medical side, and it started with 20,000 patients both at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and then out in Washington State and then in Geisinger's health system down in Pennsylvania. That program is now expanded currently to 3 million patients, but that's been limited to the medical side for the most part, where patients could see their notes through an encrypted system. So there's a lot of safeguards in here. You have to be enrolled in the system, and they could then see what their primary care physician or other physicians have been saying about them and what they're writing about them.
Limited to the medical side, meaning limited, non-mental health issues.
Right, to the non-mental health side. This past spring, we opened this up now to behavioral health, mental health notes on the outpatient side, so for billable visits. And this is really an expansion then of the open note system. And for many of us that are participating in this, and I'm spearheading this with Deborah Judd for the social work side, we are really enrolling our staff to do this with the patients that are in this patient site program, in the open notes program, and they can now see from the confines of their home or on their iPad, wherever they are, the notes that we have written once we have signed off on them.
And how do you think it benefits patients to be able to see what their therapist has written about them?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, much of what we have done has always been fairly secretive, and it's an interesting paradigm that patients entrust us with their secrets, and so there's always the question, what are we doing with those secrets? And there's a huge problem that we have in all of healthcare, that of the trouble with mistrust or trusting relationships. And so part of the question here is, how do we foster greater trust in the patient community? So we've moved, and I think Beth Israel Deaconess is a leader in this field in the way that we try to be very transparent in everything we do, to having patients be able to see what we're writing about them, so that they can benefit from that.
But of course, secrets can be upsetting sometimes. So, do you always think a patient will benefit?
No, I think there's a small cohort of patients that will not benefit from this, where that it could have an adverse effect. And our job as professionals is really to think about who is this going to be beneficial for, and who is it not. And it's like the analogy that is oftentimes used. It's like prescribing a medicine that it has benefits for most, but then it has side effects for some, and then our job is really to figure out who does have the side effects, and we know where there are some side effects.
And Steve, for this pilot project, you've been able to select which patients you want to take part. So what are the criteria, and who do you think is a good candidate for this and maybe not a good candidate for this?
Well, it's interesting when you say select, Sasha, because some we're trying to be very successful with this to begin with and to deal with the various therapist levels of comfort about that. So there are the Department of Psychiatry, for instance, opened up about 10% of their patients on all the panels are opened up to this. And in social work, most of the staff have opened it up to all of their patients. So there's some that are starting more slowly, and there's some and ramping up, which is really what psychiatry is doing, and that's a fine way to do that. And then there's also the way of just really starting it all, and really for some of us, myself included, we just open it up to everybody that we're seeing. They can see whatever we're doing, irrespective of the background that we have, and we have very diverse populations there.
Now, you began this program in April, so it's still relatively young. How would That's you describe correct. Your results or conclusions so far at this young stage?
It's so, again, a good question. So we have about 700 patients that are participating in this program, that are participating in the Open Notes program. And what I would say is that for many patients, they're finding it really wonderfully helpful if they look at their notes. And those patients, what I think where they benefit from is really having some sense of reassurance that their therapist is both listening to them and also hearing what they're having to say. And sometimes it helps them to have reminders of things because we know that, in fact, most patients, when they leave the office, don't remember everything that was talked about or said. And this allows them some way to refresh their memory and to use that as a tool in between sessions. And that's what it is. It's really a tool. It's not an end. It's a means to an end in that way. And does it further the relationship is really part of the question here. And then there's some patients, what we're finding is that it's been very silent with a lot of the population who are saying to us, yeah, I looked at a few notes. It's just what I expected, and I haven't really needed to look back. Or for some patients, they're choosing to say, it may be too anxious, or I think I'll get too anxious, so I'm not going to look. So
people have a sense of whether they can handle it or not.
Exactly. They do. They oftentimes do. There's one great quote that one patient gave to one of the therapists about, it's like going to the mechanic, and if I bring my car in, I really don't want to look under the hood afterwards. So thanks, but no thanks. So, you know, that's a choice that they're making.
Steve O'Neill, we have one of your patients on the line because we wanted to be able to get a personal account of this program from a patient. And this is David Baldwin. He participates in group therapy sessions with you as part of his treatment for bipolar disorder. So hi, David, and thank you for talking with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So, David, you've been able to read Steve's notes about you. Why did you want to access them?
I've always been interested to see what Steve and my other therapists were thinking about me. I know we talk a lot in sessions, but then, you know, what is he writing down, or what is he making notes about me? So that was all kind of I was always interested in that.
And what did you find when you read them?
I was actually quite satisfied. I think the notes reinforced a lot of things that I was trying to accomplish in therapy, and actually pointed out some things that I had talked about, but was really unaware that I was doing in my therapy that were helpful for me to see, actually.
Any specifics you can...
I've been reading them from now since back in April.
What's an example of something that you saw that... give us some specific that you read and the impression it had on you.
Let's see. Well, one of the things was he noted that I actually recognized that I'd made a lot of progress in dealing with my bipolar disorder, especially having to do with my anxiety that I've been having over the last year, and that I've been struggling with that, and it's held me back. But in spite of that, he noted that I was really trying to force myself to participate more with others, and in spite of the anxiety that I was having.
And when you read that, how did it make you feel?
I was pleased. I said, "Oh wow, I am actually doing something, even though sometimes it feels like I'm not." A lot of that happens in therapy. You just don't realize that over the course of time that something has changed in you, and you need others to kind of support that progress for you.
David, can you imagine a scenario where you read something that would be upsetting, where you feel like it might be a negative and not beneficial?
Not so far. I mean, I've been through a lot of different treatment and a lot of different things with my bipolar disorder and depression and anxiety, so... I think, and I've been lucky and fortunate enough to talk about it a lot, so I haven't seen anything like that so far. And if I did, I would really call up about it. So, Steve, there's a lot of access to Steve, you know, with phone messages and him calling back. So.
So, Steve O'Neill, as you sit here in the studio listening to your patient talk about the experience, is this what you hoped this program would achieve? What do you think when you hear David say this?
I think so. I mean, I think what's interesting is to think about David's in a group therapy, so there's the other patients in the same group. I think that there's variability of experience even within that group. So David has an individual therapist as well as in the group therapy. And, you know, I can think of one person in the group, for instance, where the group has been encouraging this person to potentially not necessarily read her notes too far ahead of time because there isn't the opportunity to process it. And that's somebody that really sees things very much in a negative frame and so may see that in that light. And if she doesn't have an opportunity to process that someplace, you know, that could be not a great thing. And so the notion for the group, their suggestion to read the notes before coming to any session, to her treatment sessions, rather than too far in advance. So that's an example. And it's interesting to think about what's the difference between individual therapy notes and then group therapy notes, too, so that there are some differences in the way that we document each of those.
Listeners, we're talking about a new pilot program at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center that lets psychiatric patients who are getting mental health therapy read the notes written about them by their therapists. And we're talking about the benefits of that, how it could help a patient, how it might be harmful. We'd like your thoughts about that. Let us know if you've had a chance to read your notes, if you wish you could. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I also mentioned that we have another Beth Israel social worker, Katel Gellick, in the studio. Katel, I want to bring you into the conversation because you and Steve have both been involved in a lot of discussions about this pilot program. As we said, you practice at Beth Israel's inpatient psychiatry units, and you have a small private practice of your own. You have concerns, I understand, about this program. What are your concerns?
Well, you know, my concerns differ depending on whether you're talking about the inpatient or the outpatient setting. You know, in the inpatient setting for psychiatry, we're working with people who are very acute in their presentation. And so they're in the middle of a crisis when they come in to the hospital. And to create a nice environment in the hospital, we do have computers for them so they can check their email, they can stay connected. And my concern is if they're reading their notes that are being created in real time while they're still in the hospital, that it could actually exacerbate whatever they're trying to cope with, that being in crisis is not the time to be trying to decipher notes that clinicians are writing, especially when those notes are for so many different audiences and the patient is only one.
That's a good point. I mean, oftentimes you're writing for other doctors where you might need to be very explicit about concerns. Maybe you're writing for an insurer.
Correct.
Could the notes simply be tailored for an audience? Could you make sure the patient doesn't have access to the notes until a certain point? Do you think there are solutions to your concerns?
Well, I think if we try to work too hard to make this fit, then it's telling us that maybe this is not the best thing to do. You know, what I see on the inpatient unit is we already have a very high burden of paperwork. And I understand that, of course, we need to document, but it takes away from time with patients. And so rather than trying to craft notes in a special way or for multiple audiences, you know, I'd rather just focus on the patient care and the time with the patient.
Katel, can you think of an example, even if it's a hypothetical, where a patient might read something and react in a way the doctor had not wanted the patient to react? Maybe
sure.
Because it was medicalese and they didn't quite understand it, or any other scenario?
Well, I mean, one of the more extreme scenarios I would imagine is someone who comes in with a psychotic episode. And so, you know, they are in the midst of a very kind of scary, confusing time where they are coping with delusions and things that seem real to them that are not real. And to read their clinician's notes about that, which would appear challenging to them in the midst of a psychotic episode, would not be helpful. In fact, it's contraindicated when you sit with people who are experiencing delusions. You do not challenge them. You just sit with them where they are and try to help them as best you can until the treatments start to take effect. So that would be an example.
Steve O'Neill, as you hear these concerns, how would you ease those kinds of concerns?
Good question again. So the way that I would think about it is that, say, a patient with a delusion is that I might document that they have a different perspective. So you don't necessarily, I think what Katel's getting to, and she's totally correct about this, is that you don't take away a patient's defense without replacing it with another. And so in some ways, you also have to validate that they have a different perspective. So the way you might document that is that, in fact, the way I do document that and actually talk with patients about that and show them what sometimes, with that kind of a situation, I may actually do the documentation right there in the moment and show them what I'm going to write, and that I'm writing that I have a different perspective than their perspective. So I'm not negating their perspective. I'm really saying that I have a different point of view. And part of their being able to live in the world is to be able to understand that people do have differing perspectives, including from their own. So how are they going to cope with that, and how will they live with that if people don't have the same perspective? So I would see that as a vehicle or an opportunity to kind of to work with the person. And it is a different framing. I think that, you know, Cattell's also right that on the inpatient side or in a lot of other services, when your audience that you're intending to document for is predominantly staff, those are the areas where we do find that there's some difficulty. It's partly where this note is accessible to the patient. And our hospital actually in 1972 passed the original Patient Bill of Rights, which was to say that patients had a right to access to their record. And that is something we've tried to be transparent and continue with that, that they have a right to see it anyway. So they could get their record anytime for what we've written. So,
Cattell?
Well, what I would add to that is that I do believe patients have a right to their record. And I think the difference when you're an inpatient service is that you're seeing your record after you leave the hospital. And so just like if someone were in acute medical crisis and would not be looking at their medical record while they were being acutely treated for a condition, when they stabilize and leave the hospital, they have a right to all of those.
It's
documents.
Like reading in retrospect. Yeah. You're going back and looking at the history of something rather than something happening in real time.
Correct.
So what I would say is that it's kind of the analogy I might think about is that there's a 70-30 rule that's used when you're delivering bad news to a patient. This is on the medical side. If you're delivering bad news, you expect the patient will only retain no more than 30% of whatever you say. If you're delivering good news, you expect that they will retain about 70% of what you say. Either way, the patient is missing a lot. And so it makes us wonder, it makes me wonder about whether on the psychiatric side, if patients can see what we've written afterwards, that it might in fact actually help them to get the other parts of that, the other aspects of it a little bit more.
We often hear in medicine these days the idea that you need an advocate, take someone with you to your doctor's appointment. So this is certainly a variation of that. At least you can read later what was said in case you can't remember it all at the moment and you don't have a person next to you to help you. We have a number of callers, but before we go to them, I want to turn back to David Baldwin, who's on the phone with us. Again, David, You've been working with Steve O'Neill. Now that you've heard Cattell and Steve debate a little bit their concerns, do you have any additional thoughts about how you think this could help or could be hurtful in any way?
Well, I have to say so far that there is a delay between the time I have an appointment and the time I actually read the notes. So there does seem to be, I don't know whether it's technological or whether the notes are written in afterwards. So I don't get immediate access to notes. And having been an inpatient, I would say that I wouldn't want to know what the notes were as an inpatient.
You'd want a little time elapsed so you could stabilize.
Yeah, as I've been an inpatient twice, and it can be it's a little frightening in there, and then leaving is a whole lot of anxiety and tension, and reading notes from what your doctor said is actually wrong with you, kind of thing, isn't really what you want to be faced with right away.
Sure. That's David Baldwin. He's a patient participating in Beth Israel's pilot program, which offers selected patients access to the mental health notes. David, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to weigh in, our listeners, we welcome you to call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we have Andre from downtown Boston on the line. Andre, your thoughts as you listen to this idea of mental health patients being able to read their therapy notes. Do you like the idea? Andre, are you with us? I think we have lost him. Let's go to Chris from Holden. Chris, as you listen to this idea, what are your thoughts?
Hi, good afternoon. It's actually kind of propitious timing because I just left my therapist's office about an hour ago and spent the hour looking at my records. I've been seeing a therapist for gender identity disorder for a while. I'm transgender. And wanted to see what was in my records, and what was interesting is that my therapist reacted very, very badly. She did not take it very well. She told me that no one in 35 years had ever asked to see records. She thought I was going to initiate a lawsuit. It took a lawyer's call from my lawyer to her to get them opened up. And to be honest, there was nothing really in them. It was just, you know, what I told her, she wrote down and took notes. There was very little in there that I didn't know already. So I think it's a great idea. I just think that a lot of therapists are not groomed to think that it's such a good idea and that patients have a right to see their records and that it can be kind of useful if they look into it.
Chris, that's a great point, and thank you for raising it. And Steve and Cattell, we've been talking so much about impact on patients. We haven't talked about impact on doctors. What is your view on this?
I think that this is what Chris is really pointing out here is that in the field of mental health, we are particularly very paternalistic, and we don't like to acknowledge that. We usually think of that we're terrific at promoting patient autonomy, but in fact, actually, we are paternalistic, and we need to be because we're making judgments about people oftentimes, and we have to, you know, use those judgments in ways where we sometimes take away somebody's civil liberties and commit them. So we are judgmental, and I think that in fact, actually, part of the way that most therapies are all taught is that we are deciding what we think is best for somebody, and this is really a way for us to partner more with patients. And I think we have to give up a little of our domain to do that. So I think it is in fact threatening to patients.
To doctors, to
clinicians. Mm-hmm. We did a and there was an article, a big article in the New York Times that we did about a week and a half ago, and there were 280 comments in the first 24 hours. Telling of interest.
Yeah.
But almost all of them were negative, and most of them from the therapist community saying we were ruining therapy. And I think they're very threatened by it.
Ruining therapy, that's strong. Could tell your view?
I can understand why some therapists would feel threatened because we do live in a very litigious society where, you know, at times people get sued. But I think actually the idea that you're empowering patients by giving them access to these notes is really actually kind of false. I think that therapists, the more that they will have to open their notes, will just write to the patient in the note, in the sense that they will tailor the note in such a way so that they know if someone reads it, that it will not cause any, you know, harm, that no one will be offended. And I also think it's telling that in our hospital, when we're thinking that it's not the right fit for 100% of patients, that we're, as therapists, are actually going to choose which patients we open this up to. To me, it kind of defeats the purpose. We're still the ones exercising the power. And so
because it's not open to everyone, right? You're still making a judgment call. We have another caller. This is Jessica from Newton. Hi, Jessica. Your thoughts about this idea of opening mental health therapy notes to the patient?
Well, you just touched on my point, which is I wonder if therapists will start to do some self-censoring if they don't, you know how a patient's going to react to something they write down, if they may decide not to write it down and therefore, you know, impact later treatment. That's just my comment and question.
It is a very good point, and I wonder this as I read about that. Will doctors find themselves doing a little editing, wanting to change their language? Cattell, Steve, your thoughts?
I do think there's the potential for that, and I think that nowadays, you know, even the notes I see now are very often written in that way. The other point I don't want to get lost here is that much of therapy is relational. You know, depending on what someone brings into therapy, you know, unless it's a very behaviorally oriented treatment plan, a lot of what makes therapy useful is the relationship with the therapist. And so I think that instead of opening up our notes and spending time away from our patient writing notes, we should be discussing it in the room. And if patients have questions about what's in our mind about them, then we should be discussing that together.
Steve, this is a pilot project, as we've said. Eventually, the goal is to determine how well it worked. How will you make that call?
So we'll make the call basically a year from now. We will ask all the clinicians that are participating in this and all the patients participating in this whether they were glad that they did this and whether they want to continue. And those are the simple questions, and that's what has been going on the medical side. And they have found that better than 99% of everyone across the board has wanted to continue. They felt that it's a very helpful thing.
As we did say, it's a relatively small pilot, and it's not random. You're selecting people. Is there any way, because it is relatively small and because it's not random, does that make it difficult at all to know whether it's effective?
Well, it's not totally selecting, too. So there's half of the patients are being selected, so there's 350. The other 350 are just opened up. So they are, that 350 are totally opened up to, there's a number of clinicians that just said, I will open up to any and all of my patients. And for that group, I think that they're, you know, it is in the context of the relationship. All of this is in the context of the relationship, as Cattell was saying, and that it only works if it's there in that aspect. I think the way that we are practiced so defensively, I think therapists are so scared of lawsuits that in fact actually is the thing that people are we're fearful about. I have a law degree as well, as I'm an ethicist, and I get calls about this all the time, and that is really not a great way to practice it, to
sure.
be defensively.
Stephen Cattell, I hope we can have you both back once there is a sort of measurement system of this, of how this has gone, and talk to you more. Thank you very much for coming in. Stephen Neal is a social work manager for psychiatry and primary care at Beth Israel, and Cattell Gellick is a senior social worker at Beth Israel. Thanks very much to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sasha.
Stay with us. Coming up, the latest story in our Remembrance Project series. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.